This episode is sponsored by State Farm. You a small business owner looking for insurance that fits your needs and budget? Well, look no further than State Farm. State Farm agents are not just insurance providers. They're also small business owners who live and work right here in your community. They understand the unique challenges of running and protecting a small business. When it comes to small business insurance, State Farm knows what it takes. Create a plan that fits your needs and your budget. State Farm agents are ready to help you choose personalized policies that truly understand your business. Insure your small business with a fellow small business owner. Talk to a State Farm agent today and get started on personalized small business insurance that fits your needs. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today.
Hey, I'm Mr. Wow.
And I'm Mrs. Wow from Waffles on Wednesday.
And when we're not eating waffles,
we're stacking Benjamins.
Live from Joe's mom's basement, it's the Stacking Benjamin Show. I'm Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug, and today we officially become your financial fashionistas. Not because Joe and OG have any style, but because we're welcoming the founder of the Foxblood fashion line, designer Lindsay Hartz. Lindsay is going to talk us through the intersection of pursuing your passions, entrepreneurship, and money. But wait, there's more. One stock took a 40% nosedive after some bad news. What does this have to do with you? We'll discuss why you should care during our headline segment. And the moment you've all been waiting for, we'll toss out the Haven Lifeline to Peter, who has some questions about forming business partnerships. And of course, your life won't be complete until you hear today's trivia. And now, two guys who've had the same wardrobe since 2003, and it wasn't even good back then, Joe and O-J-J-J-J-G.
Hey, someday Jordache jeans are coming back in style. That's why I keep wearing them. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Stacking Benjamin Show for a Wednesday. I am Joe Saul Sehi, Average Joe Money on Twitter. And across the card table from me, dressed in his members only jacket, high style, it's Mr. OG. Are these fashions are 2003. I'm talking like 1985, aren't I?
You're a little off.
So, swing and a miss. I have no idea what's going on in 2003 because my kids were eight.
So I actually do know the answer to this because we were going through a whole box of pictures. So it's beginning of school. The kids have to do like all this stuff about family and everything. And my wife was going through all these pictures and she goes, first of all, do you remember when you used to get pictures and you'd get duplicates?
Yes.
She's like, why the hell do we have two of all of these? They were terrible.
Just in case one of them you wanted to give to grandma, you know, of the kids.
You check the box that says, gosh, how many people don't even know what we're talking about? You said, you know, drop your film off at Meijer and you check the box that says duplicate. And then sometime later you go pick it up. And then did you ever look in the thing of the prints and you go, oh, I know that guy. And you pull him out and thumb through his pictures real fast.
I never did that.
You never did that? Okay. Maybe that was just somebody else I knew.
That is small town America. That is definitely.
It is. But anyways, the answer is pleated khakis.
Oh, pleated. I forgot about pleated khakis.
With cuffs. Pleated khakis with the 1-inch cuffs on the bottom. That was the good look back in 2003 for OG.
Maybe we should talk to Lindsay Hartz about that. You think, how big will that eye roll be? When I'm like, hey, we know fashion. Hey, Lindsay, check this out.
Pretty bad.
Yeah. We got a great show today, guys. We got Lindsay Hartz coming on talking about something that's difficult to get into, which is the fashion industry. How do you break into the fashion industry? She also did some pivoting with her company at the start of COVID. We'll talk about that. And of course, talk about entrepreneurship and leading a team of people, all stuff that's great for your career, the sail on your ship, so to speak. But first, we've got some great headlines, so let's get this party started.
Hello, darlings. And now, it's time for your favorite part of the show, our Stacking Benjamin's headlines.
Our first headline comes to us from Bankrate.com, and this is bad news for anybody who's in line to refinance their mortgage, written by Jeff Ostrowski. Mortgage refinancing will get more expensive. with surprise agency fee. You know how you get those surprises sometimes? Like people surprise you with a birthday party. People surprise you maybe with a little dessert at the end of dinner. Maybe
it's like a surprise 12B1 in your mutual fund. Imagine the outrage if Vanguard was like, hey, from now on, we're going to have a surprise agency fee.
And once again, there will be very little about this. I mean, there should be some pretty big outcry here. There's going to be none.
It's a huge number.
In a surprise move, mortgage giants Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac said they'll begin imposing a new fee of 0.5%. Sorry. On all refinancings that close after September 1st. For a borrower refinancing a $300,000 loan to take advantage of record low rates, that move alone is going to add $1,500 in new cost, OG.
I was thinking we've got to have one that's like booing.
We do.
We don't have any booing ones. Well,
the fact that we have now two of these boards, you've got one and I've got one. I mean, we could just go.
All day long. A 0.5% on a mortgage loan. That's a ton of cash. That's a ton of money.
And with so many people refinancing right now with rates at all-time lows, like what a great time for them to announce this. Just for them, I'm sure there's some bean counter going, we are missing out on a ton of money. There's so many people going in and out the door every day. Like, what's the first thing that they say when you talk to any mortgage lender? They're like, get in line, I'll get to you in a month.
Right. Gosh almighty. So annoying. But you're right. It's not going to get a lot of play. So what do you do about this? Find a bank that's not a Fannie Freddie shill?
I think that is a question for, it's got to be a question for your banker or for your refinance person. Am I going to have to pay this new $1,500 fee if I work with you? Greg McBride had an opinion. He's a CFA, Bankrate's chief financial analyst. He says, make no mistake, the consumer's going to end up paying this fee, diluting the benefit of refinancing and discouraging homeowners from doing so during the worst economic downturn in 90 years doesn't make sense. As if there aren't enough fees already in refinancing, as if the process doesn't contain enough unwelcome surprise for the borrower, now you have this. Greg doesn't seem happy about this. Greg's a little grumpy about this.
Yeah, as he should be.
Yeah, absolutely. Rightly so.
But I know why they're doing it. They are trying to slow it down. They're trying to slow down the applications. They're trying to slow down the risk associated with the fact that people are refinancing and then, you know, subsequently defaulting. Although it doesn't change the default rate, I don't think, which is kind of the argument. Because if you're going to default on your mortgage, you're going to default whether it's at 6% or 2.5%. Maybe even less likely to default if the payment's lower would be arguably the case. Anyways.
Let's talk about what you can do about this. I think one thing you can do, we talked about asking the question around what are my fees that I'm going to pay? And some of those fees, OG, are negotiable. You know, there are some of the closing fees that your lender might give you a break on.
When we went through this recently, there's on the good faith estimate, you know, there's little spots where it says these fees are negotiable. These fees are, they don't say negotiable. They say shoppable.
Yes.
You can shop these. You can't shop these.
Which I like. I like the fact that it's spelled out that way.
Yeah. But I wonder how many people actually do it. I didn't. Did you? I mean, the last time you got a mortgage, did you go, oh, I can shop for title insurance? Hold on, let me do that. Or did you just go, okay, whatever, title insurance, whatever that is and however much it is, I don't care.
It's strange how analytical people will get about a mutual fund being 0.04 versus 0.03. And yet on the other side with a mortgage, I've done the same thing. All right. And it doesn't help, by the way, this is what doesn't help. It doesn't help that my mortgage lender is a friend of mine, right?
Right.
So I feel like if I say to Robert, hey, by the way, I want to get rid of that one. What do you say we get rid of that one?
Well, you know what they say, Joe. Friends ask for discounts. Good friends pay full price.
I got to quit being so friendly.
I've been meaning to talk to you about your financial planning fee.
Exactly it. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Another good reason though to ask. And you know what, as you know, we're about to move into a different house. I've been talking to Robert lately. I think I am going to ask him about that fee.
Just totally grind him down. Cause he's going in going, oh, this one's an easy one. Let's close this one up for the Sal C highs. This one's easy. And just be like, so agency fee, $125. I need you to walk me through that. What is a flood certification form? Can I do that on my own? It's $30, Joe. I know, but hey, I'm in personal finance, man. I got, you know, gotta walk the talk.
And our second headline, just from Business Insider, written by Kanishka Singh at Reuters. Kodak $765 million government loan to produce pharmaceuticals is on hold after lawmakers raised, quote, serious concerns. Eastman Kodak's $765 million loan agreement with the U.S. government to produce pharmaceutical ingredients has been put on hold due to, quote, recent allegations of wrongdoing, the U.S. International Development Finance Court said. Earlier last week, senior Democratic lawmakers asked federal regulators to investigate securities transactions made by the company and its executives around the time it learned it could receive the government loan. Recent allegations of wrongdoing raise serious concerns, DFC said late on Friday in a tweet. We will not proceed any further unless these allegations are cleared, the DFC said. It was referring to a letter of interest it signed on July 28th with Kodak. The only thing that I, you know, okay, so we're seeing this with Kodak. This is very interesting. Kodak made cameras before OG. All of a sudden, when they're
into crypto or whatever.
Yeah. The pivot that was going to happen here at Kodak that might be on hold is just amazing. You saw this with cannabis, right? Back when cannabis was hot, we've seen it with crypto. We've seen these companies that just all of a sudden go, oh, this is the new thing. Got to do that one.
Do you remember that? I was trying to think about the name of that company, and we did a story about it where they just changed their name. They made like railroad ties or something, you know, like whatever physical product they made. And they changed it to like railroadtiescannabis.com or something.
Yes, I do remember that.
And it was like, phew, the stock just skyrocketed.
Stock went through the roof.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're in the cannabis market now. And now you'll have...
like, what do I got to do to get me some of that? That PPP money or that bailout money. They're like, sir, you need to be an airline. They're like, we've got airplanes. We're about to get them anyway. Yeah. we were going to get them. We were going to start an airline, but now the pandemic, we need help.
Hey, get Betty the airplane salesman on the phone.
Also, before we sign this deal, we're going to give everybody some bonuses real quick. Post-date those checks just till tomorrow. Don't cash it. It's like when you used to go down to the water department and you'd write the, you'd say, I don't know. This happened to us. We're just simple folks. I remember my mom going, would it be all right if I dated this for tomorrow? And the lady across the desk would be like, sure thing. Just, and they'd hold on to it for a day.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Post date a check.
You think they're doing that with Kodak? Hey, can you just hold on us for a couple days?
Bonuses? That's exactly what they're doing.
The executive bonuses are hold, but they're going to hold those, I think, maybe indefinitely. But hey, can you just hold this $765 million government loan so we can pivot to produce pharmaceuticals instead of being in the
camera business? Whatever their last thing was.
Yeah.
Our new director of research and development, his name is Bill, and he's really good at landscapes. He's good at vaccines. That's what we meant to say.
I think the point here is, and the reason I wanted to bring this up was that shares fell as much as 40% after the announcement. And this is an issue when you've got a company like Eastman Kodak that was already in, I guess we'll call it big trouble before this pivot. When you go buy some of these companies looking for a turnaround, I think it's more of a bet than an investment.
Oh, it's 100%. It's the same thing as the Hertz thing, or it's the same thing as by Macy's or, you know, any of these types of flyers that you think, you know, this may be okay.
Yeah.
It's the greater fool theory is what it is. It's the stuff of, I don't care what I pay for this. I just assume that there's someone dumber than me that's going to pay a higher price for it. And as long as I'm not the last one holding the bag, then it's okay. And there's no research going into any of these stock purchases. There's no technical analysis going in any of these stock purchases, none of the stuff that we would consider reasonable investing strategy. It's just like, hey, it's momentum, you know, and that's a factor. It really is.
Sure.
So it's like, well, I bought it for two. It's now at three. It's going to four. You know, I can buy some more at four. Hopefully it goes to five. There's nothing to support any of that. There's no finances to support it. There's no successful products to support it. So it's, it is 100% a bet. No different than going to the casino. Which would be more fun, frankly.
Well, and that's the thing, is that stocks move for two reasons, right? They move because the company does something. You and I were talking earlier today about Apple. Apple sold a ton of devices, and that may or may not be a reason why you want to buy Apple stock. The second reason that stocks move is because of news that comes out. And you can see how fickle news can be. News that this was happening can send a stock shooting straight up. News that it might not be what you thought it was can send the stock straight down. And this is a factor, I think, that's much more makes individual stock investing, again, much more dangerous than buying an ETF, is that I think to some degree, if you're playing the individual stock game, you kind of got to keep up with what the news is around a company.
Well, and remember that by the time the news happens,
it's too late.
It's already, you know, you're not that fast.
Yeah.
You can't, your computer internet speed is not faster than that $100 billion hedge funds. Guess what? They also might cheat. They also might go, I'm going to need to know this about 8 seconds before everybody else. If that's a trade that they're doing, they're ready to go. They've built a computer program to execute that immediately. They've got a direct line to the trading floor to do that. You've got to go through your broker, who then sends it to somebody else, who then sends it to the trading floor. You're not getting that price. And it's the same thing on the upside too. If you don't own it beforehand, you're not going to be able to capture it. Now, you might get a little bit of it because the rest of the retail money is a little bit behind it. But there's nothing wrong with having some fund money. If you've got your financial plan good to go and you're on track for your goals and you've got a little bit extra, I was just talking to a client a couple of weeks ago, wanted to invest in some fund money stuff. It's not a bad idea. You can do that if you can afford to have it go to zero, especially if it's something like this.
Yeah. I think that is lesson number one right there, Audrey. I think you nailed it. And lesson number two here, refinancing the mortgage, add in some more cost, or ask your refinance specialist if it's possible to refinance through a company that isn't a Freddie or Fannie company. Although on that note, you think everybody else is just going to match it? I mean, is this the new normal? Freddie or Fannie are going to throw this fee on there? I would think if I'm a banker and I'm have some loans that don't have this fee, it's perfect for me to just match that fee.
I don't know. Could you just say our fee is only 0.25%?
Right. About to give a call to our new friend, Lindsay Hartz. Lindsay is an entrepreneur. And what's fascinating about Lindsay is she is completely self-taught. She's somebody who did not study entrepreneurship in school. And she has met a lot of adversity during her career running her Fox Blood fashion line. We're going to talk to her about breaking into the fashion business. By the way, if you don't know who Lindsay is, Lindsay has worked with a bunch of recording artists as she was breaking in. We're going to ask her about this. She's worked with Slash. She worked with Megadeth to make them look very Megadeth-y. And is that a thing? And she also worked with Steel Panther. Her designs have graced the runways of the prestigious New York Fashion Week. 2017, she created Fox Blood. We'll talk to her about her fashion line here today. Let's say hello to Lindsay Hartz on My Dad Shortwave. And my new friend Lindsay Hartz joins us. How are you?
I'm great. Coming to you from Los Angeles, California. Rolling through a pandemic the best I know how.
Well, I want to ask you about the pandemic, Lindsay, because my understanding prepping for talking to you today is that you guys at Fox Blood, you made the decision to shut down production and start making masks. Tell me about that decision.
Yeah, actually, a lot of designers did, especially the smaller guys. COVID came out of nowhere, and we were all prepped to release our spring collections, and everybody collectively just stopped. We realized what the problem was with the nurses and the doctors and just wearing insane PPE, and no one was coming to help. So all designers really did come together and stop their regular production and just start making masks and donating tons of them to the medical field. And finally, everything got caught up, and now that round of masks that we made, we definitely gave a couple to a few customers, like some runoffs or something. And everybody's like, are you going to bring those back? And I'm like, it was a moment. we were trying to do the good, you know?
Well, but I'm wondering with you, knowing a little bit about you, were your masks all black or have some badass design on them or something?
They were definitely all black and the most comfortable. No, and like went with every outfit.
Bring me behind that decision though, because I can't imagine it's easy stopping production. I mean, did you have a team of people and you got together and you ran through the numbers? Tell me about making that painful decision. Or was nobody buying anything then anyway?
Well, it's a really interesting thing. I love to boast about millennials being so easy to change something. If something's not working or we need to repivot or rechange, like we're always like, okay, let's do it. So pandemic hit, the news hit about PPE and all that stuff. And I couldn't have the girls, my staff is all female, and I couldn't have the girls in the office anymore either. I'm like, okay, everybody go from home. Even if production started to show up before, like we wouldn't even be able to ship it. So it was really like just a moment of we need to give back. Yeah. So everybody go work from home. Everybody still has their job because I couldn't do this without you anyway. We're going to pivot production to mask to take care of the people. And then hopefully that'll come back to us. And it did. It did for sure. And that was, I would never not make that decision. Like, you know, it was like a couple grand out of pocket for the great of good that I felt really did help a lot of people. So it was like not a bad decision and not like a hard decision by any means. It was more of a hard decision to like come up with a design that was comfortable and aesthetic and affordable to make rather quickly. So that was like the more tricky part.
But I imagine that somebody like you, you get into that challenge.
Heck yeah. Especially I love to problem solve. Designers problem solve all day long, you know?
Well, let's go back then and talk about your career because I'm fascinated. I'm sure our listeners are fascinated about how somebody becomes a fashion designer. So tell me, how did you get your beginning? Did you begin in Hollywood or in LA or did you wind up there? And tell me about the beginning dominoes that created you and your brand.
Yeah, I actually am completely self-taught. I never went to college. And I remember being in high school and telling my family, and none of them went to college, that I wanted to be a fashion designer. And they're like, oh, you know, it's really competitive. I don't know if that's a good idea. Maybe you should like do something else. And I like was like, I kind of really want to do this. So I got gifted my first sewing machine at 16 that I still have in my closet and just started like making stuff. And at that time, like the internet was just starting, like LiveJournal was a thing. I don't know if you remember that. And so it's like, you put your things out there that you were making and people would send you a check in the mail and you'd send them this like awful thing you made. And it was still a weird community. And now we have this like insane internet presence and community that anyone can buy anything at any time, at any moment. So I think I've always had that drive to connect people that weren't necessarily next to me. You know, because I knew I was doing something that wasn't average or normal, and I had to find my tribe, more or less.
Did you give yourself an amount of time that it was going to take? No. Did you say, I'm going to give myself 5 years, I'm going to give myself 10 years or something like that?
Well, Foxblood has been a brand now for 4 years. And right before I started Foxblood, everybody was looking at me like, I don't know how much longer you can do this. Like the timing is, you've been really pushing this dream for a long time because it's hard. Being a fashion designer is especially hard. Even when you go to college, they don't necessarily teach you how to start your own brand. They teach you how to work for somebody else. So I get that a lot now with a lot of fashion students coming to me like, how do I do what you do? And I'm like, you just have to be creative and a little outside of the box and willing to really, really work. It's not easy what I do at all. And like people always want to come in and dabble in the fashion business and like talk to me about it and be like, oh, I really want to make something. And I'm like, cool, come to me when you have 10 grand and then we can make something and go from there. But I was like, but if you don't have 10 grand cash liquid, like it's a really difficult situation. And that's taken me 15, 20 years to figure out, you know?
Yeah, but it's funny because of that, because of working through that, I would imagine you have all these business lessons already that most people don't learn in a business school.
Exactly. So I always say that, like, I definitely wasted a lot of money, like figuring out how to get here. And that was like my college tuition. I wasted a ton of money and time. So I like to say, don't worry, I still paid my dues. Don't worry.
Well, but I could also imagine, though, you were still being paid by people at the same time other people are taking out student loans. So there's a win.
But barely. I kind of learned that. So I was born in New York and I was actually living in Ohio for a bit and doing fashion there. And then I did a New York Fashion Week show. And that's when I finally made the decision, like, I can't grow anymore here. I got to move to LA. I want to work with bands. I want to work with musicians. And so then I got over here and really tried to crawl and figure out and make those mistakes that I didn't know and go from there.
Did you have a job when you came out to LA?
The goal was to not have a job. The goal was, the big Hollywood star-eyed dream was to work really hard in my corner of my room and sew and make designs and like find people that want to buy them in person, like celebrities or rock stars or whatever. I kind of did that, but like no one really wanted to pay for stuff. Everybody kind of wants to be gifted things because whatever, you know? Then I realized like, wow, this sucks. I'm starving. So I was like, these people are wearing my designs, these celebrities and stuff, and their fans are like, hey, how can I get one? And I'm like, here's the actual price tag. And they're like, and then I was like, man, like, why is there nothing like an option like what, you know, their idol is wearing that's still like affordable at a price point? And I really started to like think about that and go from there.
I want to ask you about those celebrities you've worked with, because you're noted for dressing Slash, members of Megadeth. Tell me about working with them. How do you end up working with somebody like Slash?
At that time, I was working with a lot of people. I was working with like Steel Panther and like Megadeth. And I made a bunch of friends in the heavy metal music business. And then before I knew it, I was just kind of getting introduced to all these people and saying like, hey, I'm a stylist. If you need anything, like, let me know. And then every once in a while, they would call on me or someone would drop my name somewhere. And it just happened. Like, it just happened. And you just say, yes. I was like such a yes woman at that time. Like, yes, 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 yes.
Is that the key, by the way, Lindsay, not to cut you up, but is that the key? Just saying yes to every opportunity that comes?
I think in the beginning, because it also teaches you your limits, where it teaches you where you should have said no, honestly, yeah. You know? And I don't think until I pushed myself that hard would I know that otherwise. If I just started saying no, or I was like, oh, I can't do it, or what if I fail? Like, so what if I fail and you never hear from them again, you know? And then you're on to the next. But if you don't push yourself to that yes person, nothing's going to happen.
The people, well, whether it's Steel Panther, Megadeth, Slash, those guys are known, I mean, A, first for the way that they play music, but secondly, they're known for their look, right? For their style. How much of that style is Lindsay Hart's and how much of it is collaboration between them and you?
So like Slash and Megadeth and all those people, like they kind of have their own set style.
Sure.
And then you have Steel Panther that is on a little bit of a bridge of costume. So that's where I really got to play. And that's where I really, they'd be like, I just want like a pink leather vest. And I'm like, okay, I'm gonna give you a pink leather vest, but we're also gonna like completely personalize it for you in X, Y, and Z. Where like the other guys in metal like are dope and beautiful and handsome and stuff like that, but like they still already have their own style and they're not very like, you know, they won't push the realm, so to say.
There must have been though something you were able to do with Slash where you put the Lindsay Hart's, the Fox Blood feel to his wardrobe.
One music video, it's called Set the World on Fire, and it's focused around this one girl. And she is so, she's wearing, I think, everything from beginning to end. She changes probably like 10 times, and it's definitely like all my style. And that's pretty cool.
That is awesome. Yeah. I want to talk about fashion just in general, because, you know, people are trying to look, you know, you can define good however you want good to be. You want to look unique. You want to look like you. You want to bring it. But like you said with Foxblood, you want to do that for less money, right? People don't want to pay the retail price tag. What are some keys that you can point to as a designer that kind of help bring that together? So maybe I can look good for less money.
You know, I don't want to say like Foxblood is like a cheap brand. We price it to a consumer who cares about where your clothes are made, the quality of your clothes. And, you know, they want to also support a small business. You know, I could definitely have a lot of my designs made in China. I wouldn't know who's making them, what the fabric content is. They'd come back kind of shoddy and I could still sell them. And honestly, people would buy it. But it's like that little bit extra of like, we're an all-female team. We're shipping out of LA. Our factories are in LA. We care about our people. We shut production. We're going to make masks. You know, we're activists. So I don't want to say that we're like a cheaper brand, but we're definitely a conscious brand that people support.
You know all the people who make your stuff.
Oh, 100%. 100%. Yeah. And even like we carry a couple other brands that aren't Foxblood brand, but again, my friends, like the designers, and I know where they're going and things like that. So it is very much fully curated by myself and the team of gals.
Are there some styles, though, that you think are timeless that you like in your line versus others that you find that maybe come and go more quickly? Like, is there stuff that you can see that's out now that's just hot in the moment versus other things I could buy today or somebody could buy today that's going to be here 10 years from now?
Yeah. So there's a line called the Foxglove Signature, and it's basically the basics and the everyday pieces that'll probably be here to stay. And it's just like good, easy, with just like a little edge cuts of female fashion, which doesn't exist. Like you could go to Target or Amazon or whatever, but somebody who actually lives the lifestyle, like me and the team, we wear this every day. This is what we love and what we do. And I think that really comes through with our branding as well. It's something that we are actually living this lifestyle. We care, we wear the clothes. So that's how.
And creating this stuff, I can't imagine just, you know, I mean, you're thinking about stuff that looks good. You're thinking about how you market it. You're thinking about, like you said, you're not a cheap brand, but you're definitely are for people who want to look good and still don't want to pay a ton of money. Tell me about your team and how you come up with these decisions. Do you work with mentors? Do you mentor people? Do you guys have a people around? Does Lindsay throw a dart? Like how the hell does that happen?
My main assistant, Amy, answered an ad on Instagram, Facebook, like where I was like, hey, I really need an assistant. And I didn't want to hire someone I knew because, you know, because you really want someone to work for you. And she became like my best friend, and Amy's seen everything. And it's so wild how that worked out. I didn't anticipate having like such a best friend. And then the more people I met, the more talented women I met that were being underpaid and undervalued. And I'm like, no, we're going to build this super team. Like, come on over. I was like, you have value here, here, and here. And they're not appreciating it. A lot of big businesses will just take advantage of, I think, millennial women that are creative and know how to use social media really well and not pay them for that knowledge. So I think that's how I like built my team around me.
That's awesome. And then when you set the prices on your stuff, how do you come up with that?
You know, we think about obviously the cost of the labor to sew it. We want to make sure the sewers are getting paid. When a lot of people talk to me about ethical fashion, they're like, we all need to have a discussion about how ethical fashion needs to be cheaper. And I'm like, no, you can't scream high quality fabrics and want to pay for that and then pay your factory worker less than minimum wage. Like, no, like they go hand in hand. And they're like, well, I feel like it should be a discussion. And I'm like, well, then that discussion should go back down to where's minimum wage at and how do we get it up higher? But anyway, that's like a whole other discussion. So when we think about price points, we think about like the costing of the fabric, which even goes to selecting of the costing of fabric before we even make the garment. Like, okay, this is our favorite fabric. Here's the cost. Maybe we can do a design that uses 2 yards of it or 2 yards or less. And then so like, of course, the cost of the fabric, the cutting of the garment is a different cost. So it's like a cut service. And then the sewing service costs something else. And then, of course, we got, you know, the models and the photographers, what happens to usually be all of us just in-house because we're already there. So we're like, who can wear this today? And because our staff is so diverse with body sizes, it's really great because we love being size inclusive and a lot of fashion isn't. So everything is from extra small to 3 or 4X in women's, which is like very rare, which shouldn't be, but it's very rare. So well, it's nice to have all these different bodies represented.
Yeah. And I love seeing that on your website, by the way. And also, by the way, following you and following the brand on Instagram is a ton of fun. We'll link to it on our show notes page at Stacking Benjamins. I want to ask you, for somebody right now hoping to break into your business, they want to do what you do. What pieces of advice would you have for somebody hoping to be a fashion designer?
I always tell people to not follow the rules. Basically, I didn't follow the rules at all. And yeah, I made a lot of mistakes, but I own up to them and it worked out. Still at the end of the day, those mistakes taught me discipline. They taught me budgeting. They taught me like so many things. And I think not to be afraid to make your own path entirely and learn is so valuable. And a lot of people are afraid and I get that, but you just got to push yourself to do it. And then like the second advice I give people is they launch their brand. It's up there. It's beautiful. It's perfect. Hire a photo editor. A photo editor is going to take your brand from here to here with like very little effort. It's that storytelling that will become consistent that your customers will appreciate and follow.
It's funny how consistent that advice is. We had somebody on about real estate last week, and it sounds like just a good photographer changes everything, Lindsay.
Yeah, it's the way we visually communicate now. Like, yeah, everyone talks about Instagram or whatever, but visually, everyone wants to be told a story that way. I want to be like, people love to read news articles, but they don't really. They want that visual communication that hits them with emotion quickly.
What's the story you're telling with the Foxblood brand?
We say it's for babes that wear black. And the story that I like to tell is that you can be stylish and comfortable and not basic, but still basic. You know, at the same day, like, we look pretty extreme. But at the same time, our clothes are pretty muted, just really nice cuts. So we kind of let us show as it is. I'm not saying we wouldn't wear a gown, outer, like club wear or whatever, but like just our day-to-day life where we can put on these clothes, be comfortable and still fashionable is very much what I'm about with Foxblood.
We will link to Foxblood and to Lindsay and to her social media accounts on our website at stackybenjamins.com. Lindsay Hartz, thanks for hanging out with us and talking fashion for a few minutes.
So glad you had a woman in business and fashion on. I'm glad I got to be here. So I love talking to other women entrepreneurs. So if anybody's listening and wants to talk, hit me up.
Hey, trivia fans. It's your favorite podcast personality, Joe's Mom's Neighbor Doug. And did you know that Mother Teresa was born on this date in 1910? As I've been looking more into Mother Teresa, I realize that we have a lot more in common than I thought. In fact, because she and I are both givers, I mean, you've known that for a long time, I wouldn't blame you if you started referring to me as Father Doug. Huh, that's got a pretty good ring to it, wouldn't you say? Well, before I enlighten you on all of the similarities between Mother Teresa and yours truly, let's get to today's trivia. Question is, the 19th Amendment went into effect on this date in 1920. It's a pretty big deal. So question is, what is the 19th Amendment? I'll be back faster than you can think back to 10th grade U.S. history.
Whether you're working from home or working on your fitness, working on a podcast at home in Vermont, you're home for a month. That's wildly specific, isn't it? But just saying, whatever you're doing, you want to be listening to what you're listening to, not what your roommate, your neighbor, significant other, your kids are listening to. Everybody needs a great pair of wireless earbuds, especially if you've got all this online learning going on at the same time that you're trying to watch Netflix, your spouse is trying to do a Zoom call. Everybody is online and listening to things at the same time. But before you drop hundreds of dollars on a pair of wireless earbuds, check out wireless earbuds from Raycon. You already know Raycon earbuds started about half the price of any other premium wireless earbuds on the market, and that they sound just as amazing as other top audio brands you know. Their newest model, the Everyday E25 earbuds, the ones I'm wearing right now, are their best ones yet. 6 hours of playtime, seamless Bluetooth pairing, more bass, and a more compact design that gives you a nice noise isolating fit. In fact, their earbuds are so comfortable, it's perfect for conference calls or binging SB episodes, whatever it is that you like to do. It's also the charging case, and I like the fit. These things fit so comfortably. And they don't dangle down my ears with these big, huge stems that, distracting or awkward during video calls. The company, you may already know, co-founded by Ray J and celebrities like Snoop Dogg, Melissa Etheridge, and OG are obsessed with their Raycons. Now's the time to get the latest and greatest from Raycon. Get 15% off your order at buyraycon.com/SB. That's right, stackers. 15% off when you use buyraycon.com/SB for 15% off Raycon wireless earbuds. Buyraycon.com/SB.
Hey, stackers, it's your kind and loving trivia guide, Neighbor Doug. And the similarities between Mother Teresa and myself are they're striking. She fed the sick, and I warm up soup for Joe's mom every time she gets a cold. She cared for the poor, Mother Teresa, not Joe's mom. And I give rides to hitchhikers all the time in the back of the old El Camino. Mother Teresa won the Nobel Peace Prize in 1979. And you know, I won a major award, the most likely to become famous prize in middle school. Are you seeing it yet? It's crazy, right? Once I point all of this out to Joe's mom, maybe the guys will start to give me just a little more of the credit I deserve for being the saint that I am. Now that that's settled, let's get back to today's trivia. The question was this: since the 19th Amendment went into effect on today's date in history, what is the 19th Amendment? For those of you non-constitutional nerds, the 19th Amendment guarantees the right to vote regardless of sex. In short, it gave women the right to vote. Of course, the right to vote didn't solve the pay gap or lots of other gender issues, but it was a start. Speaking of politics, I'm the guy who can solve your issues. Now, don't forget to give old Father Doug your vote in November 2020. Hashtag Doug2020. Gotta go. See ya.
I love discussions like that, OG. Talking about stuff, talking about money in a different way. I mean, somebody that just has a lot of hustle. I mean, you can just tell. Lindsay, there is...
Go get it.
Yeah. And when people always get fooled. And I feel like a lot of people who are just interested in more money, bigger, faster, get fooled into thinking there is a free lunch, or they hear about somebody who's marketing this brilliant thing. You know,
she was an overnight success 10 years in the making.
Right. That's what I was going to say. You know what's brilliant about Lindsay is she worked her ass off. Like, yeah. She worked hard to get where she is. And I think that's a great lesson. Don't be outworked. Hey, let's start with Haven Lifeline, OG, and tackle some of life's most important questions. Our friends at Haven Life Insurance Agency put their heads together and they thought there's got to be a better way. And instead of long forms sitting across from your agent, refilling out the same stuff that nobody's going to look at, they shortened the application. They put it all online. They made it so you can get an instant coverage decision so that you can spend time with your loved ones doing other things and get the life insurance that you need. And all policies issued by their parent company, Mass Mutual. So you'll have life insurance through a company that's more than 160 years old. Head to our link, stackybenjamins.com/Haven Life. To check it out. Today, we're going to throw out the lifeline to Peter. Say hi, Peter.
Hey guys, want to put first things first. Little Dougie slid into my DMs last week and started asking for some fan mail. Wanted to let him know it's on the way, but it may take a while, as I've had to train my carrier pigeons one-on-one due to all these new social distancing requirements. Speaking of distance, I'm happy to report I finally got my telephonic smackdown scheduled with OG in like 2 weeks. Took a while, but whoever would have thought I'd find an email from that guy in my spam folder? Go figure. Now on to the boring stuff. What do you guys think about partnerships? I'm a real estate investor, have a few properties of my own already, cash flowing pretty well. Got a buddy who's a GC kind of doing the same, but has more direct construction experience. He's spendy. I'm conservative. He's a little bit country. I'm rock and roll. But we're both successful in our own rights. Not worried about the details of long versus short-term rentals, the eviction moratoriums, or the future. We're both experienced and have some cash reserves, and we're prepped for some difficulties. But I've always heard that partnerships are rough, and that's where I would worry, as we are good friends. So here's my questions. OG, as a landlord yourself, would you ever consider taking on a partner in your apartments, and what drives that decision? Joe, how did you and Bobby set up MWF to be win-win with any autonomy for the two of you? I'd be interested to hear your thoughts. I know this is probably a question which merits some more details and nuanced answers, but I'm like 50% of your listenership 97% of the time, so I figured you could spare a few. I appreciate it. Thanks, boys.
Everything from letters to you or from you in a spam folder to... Yeah, that's funny. That's good. Nice job, Peter. So let's talk about partnerships. Would you take on a partner in your real estate venture?
It's a really interesting question. I've had some successful relationships in that realm. Looking at you, Saul Cihai.
Well,
and some non-successful ones.
I was going to say...
at you, Saul Cihai.
Well, I was going to say that because, I'll tell you, and OG and I will both tell you that this relationship, before it became, I think, the juggernaut that it is today, went through the valley of death a couple times. We really had growing pains working together, like who's doing what. I would say if we were going to do it again, we probably should have sat down and been more serious about, of course, we didn't think the podcast would be here.
Exactly. imagine if one of us would have said to the other, you know what we should do? Sit down and really fashion out who's going to do what.
Yes.
Why? Nobody listens to this crap.
Yeah. Yeah. We should have had more of a business plan, but it was just two guys grabbing microphones. And frankly, as it became more of a business, that's when the growing pains came for us. So yeah, partnerships are hard. Partnerships are not easy.
Both of us are in a coaching group called Strategic Coach. You're, I think, end of your first year-ish or so. I've been in coach for, I feel like, 10 or 11 years at this point. But one of the things that they talk about that I've tried to design my planning business around is a concept of unique ability. and the things that you're good at. And a lot of times the focus that we have in our day-to-day lives and what we're taught to do is to focus on the stuff that we're not good at. Well, you're not good at that. You need to go practice that. You're not good at that. You need to get better at that. The groups that we belong to kind of think of this on the other side, which is if you're really good at that, why not just go do that and be really, really good at it? And then the stuff that you're not so great at, find somebody who is really great at it, who loves that part of it, and then bring them in and have them do that. So in the example that Peter was talking about here, hey, he's a little bit conservative and I'm aggressive, or he's got this skill set. I would look at it from the perspective of what can you bring to the table? Not money, because either you got it or you don't. You know, you start a business and say, I'm going to put in 50 grand. You put in 50 grand. Boom, we're partners. That doesn't do anything. You need to find skill sets that are complementary to one another. Are you really great at finding deals and your partner's really great at outsourcing and running the projects? I think one of the things that makes the relationship that I have with my spouse perfect is that we are completely different in every way. Joe, you just spent 3 weeks with us a month and a half ago. And you knew this. I mean, you've known her for a while. We have similar interests, but the approach that we take is completely different. She's much more deliberate and much more spreadsheet oriented and show me the facts of the case. And then I will simmer on it for the next 30 days and then come back to you with a decision. Whereas I'm much more, I thought through it. I know the answer. This is what I want to do. Let's do it. And if I'm wrong, who cares? We'll just change it. And both of those are important to have in a relationship and in business and everything, but they're complementary to one another. Sometimes you can
but also I think you got to go in knowing that.
Oh, well,
like for somebody who makes decisions very quickly, like you and I do, you know, if you didn't go into that relationship knowing that the person's that person, you're looking for the balance. I mean, the thing that I look for as I get older, as I'm listening to you talk, I look for people like that who approach things differently than me, who look at my blind spots, which is not the way early in my career I worked. Early in my career, I wanted to be surrounded by people that were like me. And the people that now that I hire as coaches and we hire as employees, I try to specifically hire people that have facets of what they're great at that does not mirror me at all.
We do a thing for our employees called Colby, K-O-L-B-E. They have a little personality test thing. I don't think they'd like to have it be called that way. But anyways, you get these... You know, you get these numbers, and if you know what Colby is, they mean something to you. And where it's really impactful, just like any number, is in comparison to other numbers. And there's no good or bad. They do a comparison tool where you take the test, and then you have someone else take the test, and then they do a report that compares them. So I did mine. I already knew it. And I had Mrs. OG do hers. This was years and years ago. You know, and then they compare it. It says OG does things this way. Mrs. OG does this way. But they didn't know that it was Mrs. OG. So the salesperson calls me and says, hey, I got to talk to you about this. I said, what's up? And she says, you can't hire this person. I said, oh, tell me more. And I can't remember the sales consultant's name, but she said, listen, you guys are not going to get along well. You like to do things this way. She likes to do things that way. She likes to do things that way. This is not going to fit. This is completely opposite. And I said, oh, very interesting. She goes, son of a gun, you've already hired her, haven't you? And I said, well, you know, in a manner of speaking, we've been married 10 years. So this was 10 years ago. And there's this long pause. And then she says, how's it working? She's convinced there's no way that this works as a business relationship. But like you said, to your point, we knew that. We know that going into it. I can't give her, here's all the stuff that I want to do on this house project. Let's hire the contractor tomorrow. She's like, whoa, easy cowboy. I'm going to go through this line by line. I'll talk to you in 2 weeks. But that's strength because she can find the intricate detail that maybe wasn't correct or whatever. So partnerships work if, in my opinion, they're structured from the perspective of strengths, not like, and I think this is kind of what you just said, it's not an echo chamber. Don't turn it into, hey, we're two cool buds who like hanging out. Hey, we should throw some money together and we could be partners.
Yeah, not great. Sadly, there's podcasting friends of ours that have been friends for a long time that are having a breakup. And I think it's partly because of the fact that they were just guys that were good friends. And it's sad to see this, uh, podcast breaking up, but I think they're still remaining friends. They're just didn't
How
have
can
that.
We be lovers if we can't be friends.
They didn't have that set up. Now, on the other side, he asked about Money with Friends, you know, so that show was a tiny show, but I really liked it because, as you know, OG, we have lots of headlines that we'd look at that we don't have time for here. But I thought, man, if I could do a show live without any editing, it would be really fun to talk about more of these headlines and have them fun. Well, doing that 6 days a week, first of all, we already know that OG's bucket was already running over. There was no way that he was going to do another.
You never asked me.
Yeah, but six.
Nice cover.
Yeah. There was no way. I wasn't going to ask you. Because
no
there
offense
was
taken.
Because there was no way that you were going to do that. And then the second thing, I did it by myself for a while. But the reason why I looked for a partner in that was because the show was growing, but there was no way it was sustainable. So because of that, I looked for somebody that had on-air experience, who knew camera work far better than I did. And the one person who I knew really well was Bobby Rebel, who's been a Reuters TV anchor, and you'll see her often from the NASDAQ. She fills in on that. So you see her on your local TV station. She's done a lot of television. So there, it was perfect. But that OG was different than your and my relationship, where it grew over time. This was from the very beginning, me saying, you know what, this podcast is going to go away if I don't find a partner. Let's make sure there's something in it for my partner so they will want to do it. My belief has always been that I'd rather have half of something than the whole of nothing, right? So we can get all technical about what percentage of the companies that we own. So we
51.
We formed a partnership. And I actually, that is our number. It is 51-49. And Bobby said, great. I mean, and when it comes to everything, we split it.
Oh, I was talking about ours.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Yes, correct. But the important thing about our agreement, Peter, was that we also have an out clause. Like with Money with Friends, if it's not going well for either Bobby or I, we have specific language in the contract already about how you can get out, how we can exit that. And that's cool because from both of our perspectives, if the partnership isn't working, it's already written in stone exactly what's going to happen, and we don't have to go through a painful breakup at that point. I really like that, OG, about having, hey, if this doesn't work, how do we exit? What's the exit plan?
Or, like you and I have it, there is no exit plan.
There is no exit. That's why
we'll do this until you die.
That's why we keep doing this show. Like, are we done yet? OG's like, no, sit down there, microphone boy.
No exit plan. Sit down, microphone man.
Time to make more donuts, but I'm sick of donuts. Thanks for the question, Peter. I don't think we answered the question. Well, I actually think we did answer the question.
He answered it. You may not like the answer, but
yeah, you have to be intentional about it. Have an exit clause and realize that there's going to be bumps in the road. There's no way though, OG, maybe put this cap on it. There's no way this doesn't affect his friendship. There's no way that it doesn't. Your friendship will change. I don't know how it's going to change, but if you're partners with somebody, it will change. Thanks for that question, Peter. You have a question for us. You don't have to have all the shenanigans like, as mom says, like Peter had. You can just ask a straightforward question. I dare somebody to do that. Head to stackingbenjamins.com/voicemail. You can do that right from your phone. You can do it if your computer has a microphone built in. You don't need any special equipment. Just stackingbenjamins.com/voicemail. That's going to do it for today. Hey, big thanks, by the way, to people who leave reviews of this here show. That helps get the word out about what people are getting into when they listen to the Stacking Benjamin show. Also, though, even bigger thanks to people that told a friend when an episode sounds good. If you know somebody who's interested in the world of fashion or interested in cool careers, thanks to everyone who told somebody about that. Also, big thanks, by the way, to... this is a review that mom has on the refrigerator. This is 5 stars from Jambalaya Jeremiah.
Do love me some jambalaya.
5 stars. Yeah, it's pretty good. And Jambalaya Jeremiah writes, I mean, it's still pretty good, but things haven't been the same since Joe stopped saying, so let's move all the time. I can't figure out how to stop it from downloading episodes, so I guess I'll keep listening. So awesome. Thanks, Jambalaya Jeremiah. That's very funny. And mom is very proud. She didn't even read it. She just saw 5 stars and said, hey, that's fantastic. Thanks for that. Also, last but not least, if you're somebody that needs better financial planning help in your corner, OG and his team are taking clients, and you can end the year on an up note by seeing how their team can help your team have a bright and shiny 2021 by doing all the planning here in 2020. All right, that's going to do it for today. By the way, that's stackybenjamins.com/OG. Doug, you got it from here, my friend. What should we have learned today?
Sure, Joe. I'm happy to help out in any way I can, but you've all known that for a long time now. First, take a lesson from our headlines. Kodak shares are down 40% after news. Well, that's a prime example of reasons to stay diversified. Second, take a lesson from Lindsay Hartz. Want to break into a field that you're passionate about? Go where the action is and hustle, hustle, and hustle some more. But the big takeaway? When I told Joe's mom I'm basically a saint, she informed me that all saints take a vow of celibacy and a vow of poverty. Well, you know, I mean, that sounds great and all, but just maybe not for me. Special thanks to Lindsay Hartz for joining us. You'll find Lindsay's clothing line at foxblood.com, or we'll link to it on our show notes page at stackingbenjamins.com. This show is created by Joe Saul-Sehy, produced by Taylor Stevens, and engineered by the amazing Steve Stewart. Online, visit us on Twitter at SBenjaminsCast or on our Facebook page. I'm Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug, and I'm wondering if KY jelly is actually made in Kentucky. SB Podcasts may receive payment on the show from sponsors and guests in the form of books, giveaway items, discounts, or other remunerations. That's a big word. There's no way you take advice from these dorks, but like Joe's mom always says, don't take advice from people you don't know. This show is for entertainment purposes only, and before making any financial decisions, consult with a real financial advisor.
We talked on Monday, I think, a little about my house choice, and I'm not sure what actually made the after show because you sent it to Steve. So
I don't know what we talked about. We talked about so much crap. We talk about so much crap all the time. I don't know what's being recorded and what's not.
I was choosing between two houses. One that was,
have you told people that you've decided yet? When did that come out?
I haven't told people where we're going. So we're in Vermont now. We're going to be in Michigan next week during the break for a few days. We're going to drive our second car. We have a beater car, the car that I bought for next to nothing. We're going to drive that to,
is that worth it? Should you just sell the beater car, buy a new beater car in new location?
I don't want to, I need to haul stuff down there anyway.
The answer is yes, but now you don't want to deal with it. Got it.
I don't want to deal. Did you see that look I just gave you?
I did. The look was, he's right. I should just sell the damn thing and just buy a new one.
I got a bunch of stuff we want to take down too. We have friends that live in the city we're moving to, which we'll talk about another day, but we're going to go from there, and we're going to have, because the closing isn't until October, we're going to live in Palm Springs for a month. That's where we're headed next. Palm Springs, California, where I heard it might be hot this time of year.
Toasty. God, did you see all the crap that I got about the Reno thing on Facebook? I should clarify that my experience in Reno is very limited. When I was in the Marine Corps, there's a training base about an hour away in Bridgeport, California, where you do some mountain training. And my experience in Reno was driving from Bridgeport, California to Reno, sitting on the tarmac of the airport, guarding a whole bunch of military weapons. And then when it wasn't my time to guard those weapons, I went into the town and ate dinner and then came back and guarded the weapons again and then got on an airplane and flew back home. So that was my experience of Reno, for the record. Mostly visited the tarmac of the Reno cargo airport area.
But you never drove in from the east?
I never drove in at all, period. But I do know that when we left Reno, we had to... Was it this trip? I feel like it was this trip. We had to like stop in Salt Lake City to get more gas to go the rest of the way because there wasn't enough. There's like so much crap that we were taking that they literally couldn't fill the airplane with people, crap, and gas, which, you know, I know a little bit about, and had to stop, you know, just merely a half hour later. Weird.
My trip to Reno to visit the campus at the University of Nevada when I thought I might go there. They invited me to come and check out the program and the school and but be a member of their track and cross country team, you know, the big money sports. And our flight out of Kalamazoo to Chicago got delayed. And at that time, the people, the gate agent would just change your flight and said, hey, why don't you board this one instead that goes to Minneapolis? And you'll fly to Minneapolis instead of to Chicago and then to San Francisco and to Reno. By the way, you'll get there 2 hours earlier. Fantastic. We didn't think about the fact that we were meeting the coach at the airport until we got to the Reno airport. So we fly in 2 hours early. And my mom and I remember we just sat around the airport waiting for this guy. And we're sitting there in the waiting area.
Why didn't you just text him?
We could have taken my mom's car phone, the one that's the size of your head that gives you radiation.
Got a couple quarters, put it in the little thing, dial the number.
Yeah, we did not have the dude's phone number. We just knew we were meeting him at the airport. So we sit there, and of course,
things are a lot simpler then when you could just be like, well,
I know,
guess I'll just sit here now. Like there was no solution to that problem other than just sit.
Isn't that funny how different things would have been?
And I was like, what do you mean? Oh my God, you're early. Hold on. I gotta,
I know
I can get an Uber. No,
I could have taken an Uber. Right. And frankly, we could, if we knew where he was taking us, we could have got a taxi, you know, we could have done that, but we just decided, okay, we'll just wait. So we sit down and we wait for 2 hours in the waiting area of the plane, the next plane that's coming in that we're supposedly going to be on. And also, by the way, 1986, somebody coming to pick us up could go all the way to the gate.
Yeah,
obviously. You know, just go sit in the waiting area with us. And so my mom and I are sitting there. She's reading a book. I'm looking around and our plane pulls in, the one that we're supposedly on. The dude that I've been sitting next to for an hour, right next to, stands up, takes this card that I didn't see before, has it in his hand, and it says my name on it. Dude's been sitting right next to me forever.
Awesome.
It was horrible. I'll tell my house story another day.
All right.
Well, this show's over, Stackers, but you know what? It's Military Appreciation Month. And that means that we've got time still for a shout out to members of our community, members of our family who have served our country. And you know what? Today, I want to give a shout out to two of my uncles, my Uncle Henry, who is in the Army. Let's do three. My Uncle Eddie, who is in the Army, and my Uncle Bill, also in the Army. And two of them served in Vietnam. One served in Korea. And a big thanks to all three of my uncles, my dad's brothers who served like he did in the military. And this Military Appreciation Month, Navy Federal Credit Union wants to celebrate not just my uncles, but they want to celebrate their members who go above and beyond. Navy Federal offers member-only exclusive rates, discounts, and tools to empower their members and help them reach their goals. Of course, you may be eligible for Navy Federal membership and you don't even know it because it's open to all branches of the military, veterans, DOD employees, and their families. They're all eligible, and I want to reiterate, and their families. If you have family, like I do, who served in the military, well, then you're eligible for Navy Federal membership. Navy Federal's employees are part of the community they serve, and many of them are military family members, reservists, or veterans. Here during Military Appreciation Month, stackers, go visit NavyFederal.org/celebrate, and you're going to see all of Navy Federal's Military Appreciation Month offers. So many cool things they're doing for veterans. You'll also see all their other awesome 24/7, 12 months of the year offers. That's NavyFederal.org/celebrate. Navy Federal is insured by NCUA, Equal Housing Lender.